All right. Well, welcome, everyone. Today, we are joined with Nunana Niyomi. He's the Associate Director of Higher Education Services at CIS. He serves with international schools around the world and is based in Leiden in the Netherlands. He graduated from Calvin College in my home state of Michigan, as well as Michigan State University. Go Green. He grew up as a third culture kid with upbringing in the US, Ghana, Kenya, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. We're going to learn a little bit more about Nunana and him growing up as a third culture kid, as well as his work in higher education. Welcome, Nunana.
Thank you.
All right, so let's get started. Tell us a little bit about, you know, being a TCA, as they call it, or third culture kid, and sort of what was that like growing up as a third culture kid?
Yeah, it's the only experience I know, so I could basically only share, you know, what felt was a normal in a way. After a while, you know, for me, I grew up in five different countries, so it became the norm just to change things up over time. And, you know, almost to be a bit like a chameleon. You know, I always knew I wasn't part of the mainstream. But even if I was in a place that was, say, my home culture in my household, say, for like Ghana, when we moved there, I still had an American accent. So then I had to kind of learn what it meant to be Ghanaian and to live in that setting, and moved to Canada again, had to then kind of change mentality and think about what that meant. And similar when I moved to Europe and then into the United States, and now living in the Netherlands. So, you know, for me growing up, it was very much a process of kind of just figuring out how are people living, how are people treating other people, and where do I fit within this? And I think for me, the gains I got out of it were probably, you know, a little bit of empathy for where, you know, people might be coming from or for the outsider in the situation. Probably the loss, the situation is that sense of identity of like, okay, you know what, this is my culture, this home, and I, you know, I feel accepted in this way or whatever have you. You still feel that little sense of like, you know, I don't really belong in any specific one area.
Wow. And then reflecting back on, you know, your experience being a TCK or third culture kid, how do you think third culture kids differ today when you think about your experience in sort of today's third culture kids?
Yeah, well, so my experience when I moved, it was like, my friends, you know, like, I'm never going to see you again. Like, you know, and I've, you know, slowly reconnected with some friends, you know, over the internet or, you know, Facebook and whatnot. But it's more like a distant memory of like, oh my gosh, you know, like, I vaguely remember who you were. You know, that was like three countries ago for me, for them to place. And they're like, oh man, I totally remember you. And I'm like, I don't really remember you. Where kids today, I find are far more connected, of course. So that ability to stay in touch and still foster relationships, you know, right now, given the situation we're all in, we're already connecting virtually as it is, even in our own cities. So kids are much more used to that. And in that sense, today, they are much more able to then maintain relationships across different time zones, parts of the world. Probably, you know, in a similar way, that same technology piece might also be a challenge for them too, because as we know with social media and whatnot, you know, you only see the projections of how everyone is living and in a more perfect way. So I imagine for kids of today, there's also that feeling of maybe a deeper nostalgia almost of like, oh, I left that behind and look how awesome their life is. And I'm really depressed dealing with my identity issues and my, you know, other challenges and whatnot, and it must be hard for me. So I imagine on a mental health perspective, it's probably tougher for third culture kids.
Yeah. And when you think about, like, you know, you went through and you said you lived in all these different places. If you can go back to one of those countries, Yeah, the choice of one country you'd want to go back and do it again. Which country would it be? Why?
Oh gosh, I get that question in different forms, and I like all the different countries I live in for different reasons. So it's hard to pick one. But you know, in terms of so maybe I might just list maybe the reasons why I like the different ones. You know, it's like. So for Ghana, if I were to go back to Ghana, it's like, that's my cultural home. That's a place that I really feel close to, you know, a lot of family, cousins, and the food and everything is just very familiar in that sense. Kenya, I love a lot because of the climate. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. And of course, wildlife and things like that. The UK, I went to boarding school there. So a lot of my formative experiences, you know, coming into adulthood, you know, adolescence, you know, being away from parents and really having to figure it out, really happened there. So that was big. And, you know, the United States, of course, was very important. You know, met my soulmate there, went to university there. Michigan, you know, yeah. You know, one of the most beautiful places. I would say, you know, maybe Michigan in the sense that that's where I've lived the longest. If I were to pick one for sure, mm-hmm. I would say that. And I skipped over Switzerland because that's probably the one that maybe is the least, where it's more like it's an okay country. It was comfortable. You know, my family was there and I have a sibling still there. But it was more like everything just works there. You know, nothing really special per se.
All right. So one thing about in your role at the Council of International Schools is you work collaboratively with volunteers, partner organizations around the world to ensure provision of high quality membership and support services to facilitate international admission and guidance at the university undergraduate level. Tell us about how, you know, you came into the world of higher education. How was that sort of like the choice? Was it something that sort of happened? Was it like through mentorship, experience, exposure? How did you discover, you know, your career and what you're doing right now?
Yeah, so, for a lot of people who come in through the world of admissions, so I came in as an admission counselor at Calvin College, where I graduated, now Calvin University. When I graduated, it was kind of like I was just looking for a job. I graduated in the middle of a recession. So it was kind of like, you know, not unlike this time now that people are going through, where it's like, just get me a job. If you're a college senior right now, you're probably thinking, how can I just get somewhere? And I was lucky enough to have found a position just as a domestic recruiter with my institution, and glad that they took me on board. And within a few months, I recognized that the person who was working with international students had more on her plate than she was able to do as one person. So I kind of just said, hey, pick me. You know, she was looking for extra help. So I was like, I will be the one. I grew up overseas. I'm basically like the students that are being recruited there. So please pick me for that role. And so I was picked, and she really became my mentor through that. Her name's Rosemary Etter. Constantly looking out for me, telling me about new opportunities, new ways to, or the things to do, the ropes, you know, whether it's, you know, go on this recruitment tour, because then, you know, you'll learn a lot more about this region. And when you're on that tour, make sure you talk to this person, this person, this person, this person, because these are going to be the people who are going to support you, you know, when you, you know, as you continue through your career and whatnot. So, you know, learning and developing that network was important. So then I was working in international admissions for a while, and at some stage, you know, we had a new vice president. He was really focused on trying to grow international student population and giving us more resources. So, you know, I got some promotions through that whole experience, and, you know, eventually emerged to lead the whole department. It was just, you know, about a team of four or so, where we were, you know, in charge of trying to get students from all over the world. And, you know, that also, you know, first of all, him having the confidence in me, was huge, and then also becoming a mentor as well, you know, through my own experience of, you know, getting into that leadership role, learning what that really meant. And so did that for a combined total of around 6 working at Calvin College, and then realized, as the third culture kids usually do, that, you know, I've been here for a long time, and it's, you know, I started to get antsy. It was a wonderful role. I appreciated it. You know, from perspective of diversity, though, I would say it's almost a bit cliche, a bit typecast, where it's like, you know, of course, you're the international person, so of course you work with international students, or, you know, other persons of color, you know, of course you're the ones who work with those roles, you know, but I was looking for a little bit more. I still had a passion for international education, so I was looking for opportunities, and something came up with CIS where, you know, it was a role working more with universities and connecting them with the schools. I thought it would be great to get out of just one institution and get to see a global view of what are the different factors impacting institutions from all over the world, whether, you know, your institutions in Australia, the UK, Canada, you know, US, all the different factors going on. And then also working with international schools as well to help with students finding them opportunities, connecting them with university opportunities, supporting guidance counselors, you know, who are advising these students. So it definitely sounded very exciting. So I joined CIS 5 years ago and, you know, kind of started into that role. And it's been a pleasure, you know, connecting with this community, organizing various conferences, student recruitment events, providing resources to help support people in this area. So that's basically how I got here.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, an amazing journey. And it sounded a lot like you're saying, is about relationships, networking, and mentorship. So thinking about those three too, what advice would you, you know, give to someone who's, you know, looking to get into higher education? So they might be, you know, either new, or they might be looking to transition into it. It might be like a sort of second career.
Yeah. So advice for people looking to get into admission. It really depends what part of your, if it's an initial career, you know, of course, you know, a lot of people just kind of almost fall into it from different perspectives. So it's almost like network the heck out of yourself. If there's something that sounds interesting to you, get to know other people in the admissions community and find out from them what, you know, opportunities that might exist and, you know, see if you can kind of network your way into that kind of initial position. If you're talking about second careers where you've already kind of built some level of expertise in some area, let's say in education, it's going to be about kind of keeping abreast of what are the main issues involved with student mobility. So, you know, subscribing to various media sources like Times Higher Education, Inside Higher Education, places like that are kind of pumping articles out on kind of the day-to-day issues, you know, joining communities, networking groups. You could also do kind of further education. So if you're thinking about counseling students, you could take school counseling master's kind of programs. And then transition that way. Most schools will be looking for some kind of credential if you're going to plan to transition into that area. On the higher ed side, you know, a lot of higher ed administration type of master's degrees, if you're in the United States, works really well, or if they're offering those online. But you know, beyond that, I would say it's indeed coming back still to that whole idea of relationships, attending conferences, connecting people, seeing, you know, looking at job registries, just to see kind of what positions are out there and putting yourself out there for those.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, those are all good resources and references just for people to know and be aware of. Before we pressed record, we were starting to sort of think and dive into the chat of, you know, sort of where higher education is now and sort of where it's going. So the final question I have for you is, where do you see the future of higher education?
if I knew that, I think I would be I'd be like a millionaire or something by now. So you know, we're in the season of the coronavirus, and so that's obviously impacting even what people's future of higher education was maybe 2 months ago. is already being impacted by this. If anything, it's probably accelerating things that people had already been talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, of course, people have been talking about online education for a long time. Now, most institutions that have been affected by this crisis have all kind of moved into online learning to try to close out the rest of the year. So, you know, if you're an institution that's really wanting to survive in this setting, it's about ramping up the online education piece. And, you know, so where I see it is that this is the online piece is going to continue to become to be an area of significance for higher education. But at the same time, that physical piece is still going to be important. So particularly for students of means, you're going to have a situation where if you have the opportunity to want to study physically, you're going to want to have the experience, because university education is beyond just, you know, being in the classroom itself, but it's also the peers that you're surrounding yourself with, the interactions you have with professors offline, the mentorship that's going on, the other, you know, experiential learning kinds of things that are happening. So, you know, I don't think higher ed is going to suddenly, you know, kind of just transition completely online. It's going to be a situation where they're going to always have that as an offering, as a complement, and a way to provide access to a broader group of people, while at the same time still offering physical opportunities for students. So yeah, I guess kind of a small thing. Of course, there are other pressures going on with higher education around things like cost of education. What does that look like? Especially in the United States, you have issues around financing, student loan crisis, so on and so forth. It'll be interesting to see what happens economically if there's so much pressure on these systems. Some people talk about a housing bubble, you know, whether that's going to burst, and then, you know, are we going to be in a situation where universities, there's going to be a bit of a free-for-all? So you could see some smaller institutions potentially struggling to meet finances during this time of unpredictability, you know, where they don't know if they're going to make the class or not. So you have that. And then, you know, obviously, you know, that's not just kind of limited to the United States setting. There's going to be a lot of pressure on institutions more broadly to look at more holistic approaches. If you look at like the UK, they're being challenged by, you know, the fact that now the A levels are not going to be, you know, what they used to be. Mm-hmm. They're still going to provide grades, but it's going to be more based on the student's coursework, right, which then begs the question, what's the difference between that and a grade point average, you know, that the US kind of has been using. And so there's probably going to be some pressure around, you know, maybe changing models and, you know, providing more unconditional types of offers, mm-hmm, you know, instead of kind of the pressure to that final examination. We're really going to have to think in higher education around just the whole idea of assessment, period, for all students, because it's been far too focused on pressure for examinations and not treating students as an individual and as a dreamer, you know, somebody who's really going to make a difference. And how do we cultivate that creativity beyond just the stats and the numbers and so on? So there are a few questions still out there. I can't tell you today, you know, like, this is what the future will look like, but yeah, I can tell you that these questions, the whole situation that we're in today is accelerating the need to answer some of these questions around, you know, assessment, around, the way higher education is financed, and around accessibility to education as well for all students.
Definitely. Wow. I love it. And I think that's the big thing. I think you're ending with, it's about those questions, asking those big questions and engaging in those conversations. And I definitely feel like they're definitely happening right now. So like we're saying before, is looking and seeing what is, and then sort of trying to picture, and at the same time, pulling in those that are being impacted and having their feedback to see what can be. Well, thank you, Nunana, for allowing us to, you know, take a dip back into your past as a third culture kid, to find out more about you and your role at CIS, and then to to dream and think about what might be within the higher education space. Where can people find you? So if you could share, you know, social media, CIS website.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. So you find me on Twitter at Nunana Naomi. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Just search my name, Nunana Naomi, should be the only one. what else? Yeah, you can also probably find me via the CIS website, but it's also nunananyomi@cois.org. So feel free to shoot me an email.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And this has been Kevin Simpson of the Association of International Educators and Leaders of Color. We are again collecting stories of folks from around the world who've worked in a variety of different capacities so that new and next generation of international educators of color especially know about people, about roles, about opportunities. So thank you again, Nunana, for joining us.
You're very welcome. Pleasure.